Okay. I will steal thunder, but Brother Ray and Brother Adam were up in the Philippines recently. I met with the brethren and did some traveling around, and he's going to tell us all about it.
Brother Adam and myself had the wonderful privilege again of traveling to the Philippines in May this year. While we were there, the very briefest of summary is that we were in Manila for 5 days. We had one baptism there. Chicago for 3 days. We had 4 baptisms there. We're in Cebu for 1 day, and I'll get to why later on. In Dipolo, we were 2 days there. We departed from Melbourne Airport, and we got our big jet over to Singapore, and then travelled to Manila from there. It was interesting, those who have heard the stories before of my first and second trip there will remember the flea-bitten hotel we stayed in with the extra bugs. We've been upgraded, and this was the new one. We went Chinese instead. Not as many bugs, but no beds. Mattresses on the floor. So, you know, we have to experience these. At least this one had a bathroom that actually worked. The shower worked. It actually had hot water. So, but the difficulty was it was about 15 minutes from the brethren, which meant we had to use taxis to go backwards and forwards to it. And here we are when we arrived at the Ports Authority, and this is Adam and myself, you know, and it's either Brother Agrippino or Brother Greg, depending on where you are. Filipinos have multiple names, and it gets quite confusing because most of the brethren know him as Brother Greg, but his official title is Brother Agrippino. So we did it this way. And most of the brethren live a bit south of Manila in a place called Taguig. This has got the very richest area and the poorest area, and you can guess where our brethren came from. They don't come from the rich area. When we were there, we actually had to... we have the different numbers there. We had, so far, there have been 59 baptisms. There is 159 people there in total in the... from the brethren, and they're in different groups. And what we have put through is the second one down is at Bona Vista. There's been 7 baptized there, 15 attending. We have Cebu, where they have Leyte in the town itself has 4 baptized and 10 that are attending in total. Cebu, there are only 2 brethren there, husband and wife, but it's very interesting. They start their morning meeting at 9 o'clock in the morning and finish at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and there's only the 2 of them there. But they are very dedicated. And Chicago Island, we've baptised 10 there, with a total of 55 there. And then Dipolo, which is the latest area that brethren have been found in. There are 2 baptised with 12 there. There's only the 2, there's 2 sisters there, and the rest of them are all children, which is interesting because they all come from a Catholic background. And one of the mothers is now letting them use her hall, her place to meet in. The Philippines, the problem is there's 7,107 islands, 94 million people, about 5 to 10% are Muslims, 90% are Christian. However, of that 90%, 80% are Roman Catholic, 10% are from other Christian denominations. Other than the Catholics, there's Mormons, Adventists, There is a small United church group. Jehovah's Witnesses are extremely active and very much against the Bible students being there. And there is also a, of all things, a Greek Orthodox church. When we're travelling, it is quite a difficult place to travel around. So when we did our first trip from Manila, we had to we flew down to Shago Island, which is after our time in Manila. Then we had to go by bus. Well, their idea of a bus is a truck with a cover over the top and wooden planks. It broke down halfway along, and we thought we were going to walk. Then we got to the port, and it was a mad rush to get on the ferry because the captain had enough people on board, so we were leaving an hour early. Then we flew from Shago back to Cebu, which is one of the main commerce islands. The only problem there was we landed 1.5 hours before the plane took off to Dipolo, but because it's Filipino time, they wouldn't let us transfer, so we had to sit there, go and visit the two brethren there. Then to get to Dipolo, which is, you can see there, not far from Cebu, doing it the Filipino way, we flew 1.75 hours back to Manila, and then flew 2.5 hours back to Dipolo. It would have taken us 45 minutes to have flown from one to the other, if we'd been able to. And that is the difficulty. And the pilots that land at Dipolo are very clever pilots because you land right beside the ocean. The start of the Bible students in the Philippines was in Manila. The building on the left is where they first used to meet. It was Brother Agrippino's house. He used to live in the roof space so that he had room for the brethren down below. And they used to fit 12 people in there for meetings. The only trouble was, if there was 8, they could all sit down. If there was 12, they stood up for the entire meeting because they didn't fit to where they've moved to the new place, Sister Lita's. The brethren still have not very good homes. And this is the area that they live in and some of the homes that they are in. Still, we went to visit them in the various places there. They make money out of anything they possibly can. They were sorting through the rubbish from the motel to see what they could get out of it that they could sell or maybe use themselves. We were going into one of the sisters' homes, which we basically had to get down nearly on hands and knees to get into. They can't sit up in it. They can't stand in it. They can sit in it. And it was just made from whatever scrap material they could find. And as you can see, the inside of the home, again, is out of what anything they can have. But it makes it very, very difficult for them to keep their clothing good. The Bibles basically fall apart after 2 years. Either through the humidity or because a lot of these houses get flooded, and so that's a major problem that we have there. This is Brother Greg's place. That's all of his books that he fits in there. There's only one small problem. He is slowly losing his books because the ants have decided that the reprints make a very good house to live in. And so he has to keep going and dusting them out every few days, otherwise he will lose them. And if a flood comes, he has to try and get them, at least his place, only the floor floods. Many of the other places it gets way up. There he is with his computer. The house is very small. The entire house would fit in probably this part of the building. No, that's too big. It would cut off there. and that's got his office in it, it's got his bedroom in it, and it is difficult for them. The outside of it is like a jail, and that's to protect it, because unfortunately that street's got the drug lords in it, so it is locked up and kept secure. These are the streets of Tegig. They're very crowded, it's a very noisy place, highly polluted. When you are there, you only spend a few days and you really start to have difficulty breathing. This was the road down to the sister's place, and it wasn't a river, it was sewage flowing down it, and that's what you walk up and through. But out of the motel, you have this the difference of the city. You've got one part of the city, high-rise buildings, beautiful buildings, and then you've got this absolute ramshackle built out of anything place where many of the brethren live. Most of them only have one room, and that's everything. One of the houses we went into looked rather nice. It was four stories high, but each room was about the size of half this space here. What we didn't realise was it was a house with four families living in it, and the first three stories had no privacy whatsoever, because everyone walked up the staircase looking down into your house as into the area you were in. A lot of them make their money by washing. And here's one of the children actually washing. They don't do too bad out of it. They get paid 3 pesos per bucket of clothes, which is about a cent. And it costs them 1 cent for the water that they put in there in the first place. So the profit is not much for them. And so they'll do that all day, both the women and also the young boys. Then you go to the extreme. This is 25 minutes down the road, and you have this wonderful mall that's bigger than anything we've got in Australia, with every shop you can think of, but it is only there for the wealthy. And it's just amazing the difference that you've come down. It's interesting, this is where the rich shop, while we were there, but we didn't get a photograph, the market that a lot of the people use, one of the markets actually has a train going through the middle of it. And when the train comes, he toots his horn, they move their things off the railway line, he takes the train through, they put the things back on the railway line and go back to selling. We don't waste space. This was just the bus traffic going into the mall. But we didn't get to travel on the buses. The buses were too expensive. We got the more luxurious version of the open old Jeeps, which we don't really fit into, but that's the way of transport for them. Buses are just far too expensive. And the streets that are around, they've built this wonderful flyover, which you can see just on the right-hand picture, which is above. It's interesting, it's a tollway, has virtually no traffic on it other than government cars, because they can't afford to pay the tolls. This was the street just down from the where the hall is as we were walking along to it. It has all the shops there, the traffic is there, they're the houses that they live in. And this is just down the road from where they meet. This was one of the other streets. We did like the dental clinic was there, you know. You can what was the sign again?
I see you spit.
Yeah, I see you spit was the name of the dentist. We took one look in the place and thought, boy, it's going to have to be an awfully bad toothache before we're going in there. But, you know, that's the conditions that the ones that are in the slum live in. I don't know whether we've got the picture, but the maternity ward doesn't look any better than what the that does. This is Sister Lita. She's in her 80s, and she decided we needed some mangoes for the supper, so she climbs up onto the roof to get them down for us. This is what the meeting hall was and the numbers in 2008. But the interesting bit now is they've had to add on, and they have built a Sunday school. They've actually got a Sunday school building that they somehow squeezed onto the side of the hall, and there were about 15 students there, and they're rather wonderful. They attend from 8 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock. They have their lessons. Then they come in with the adults that arrive at 9 o'clock, and they go from 9 to 12. The children do not make a noise other than to sing. They had to do the hall up. Now, you might say, gee, this is glamorous. They've got all curtains and material there. That's to cover the hideous look of the walls. It also has to do with the place got flooded to three quarters of the way up the chart of the ages was the water level early this year. And the whole place got flooded out, and they had to basically refit it out again. This was the evening meeting, and they meet on Thursdays and Fridays, usually from 7:30 till about 9:30. And that'll be a fellowship testimony meeting that night, and they really do enjoy being there. This was the Manila class when we were there on the Sunday with many of the brethren that were there. I was surprised to how many new are there. You always worry when you baptise people to whether they're ever coming back. Of all that we've baptised, there's only one sister that is not there anymore. All the rest are attending. And it's not easy for them to attend because many of them walk, and it might take them an hour to walk there to get to the meetings, and it's not a nice area to be walking in. They decided that Adam and I were coming, they would have coconut rice for the night, which is great for the teeth because it's made out of mainly sugar, some rice and a bit of coconut, but it's a delicacy for them, or as others call it, sticky rice, and it is. The children, after they do their lessons, then come in and actually have to present and tell the adults what they did for the day. And the guy in the middle with the big smile is Butch. Butch is the guy that some of you, we've got a photograph of him, so I'll come back to him in a minute because there's an interesting story there. And again, we've got the sisters there. There are definitely more sisters attending than men, but when we first went there, only Brother Greg was capable of running the class. Now they've got two elders and two deacons that are able to run it. People say, what does our money go to and what does it get used for? One of the things is we use it for medicine for them because the government does not provide medical treatment for most of these people. Butch has cerebral palsy. When we first went there, he couldn't hold himself up. He couldn't speak to us. He couldn't do anything. His speech is not very good, but the second picture on the right, he is attending the class. If anyone thinks he is a fool, I've got no hope. When we were doing questions and answers, he was the fastest at telling at being able to find the verse. He'd be telling them to go through. He knew what we were saying. He'd remembered Adam and myself. So it does work. The view out of the motel shows you right down into Manila. It's It's an interesting city, a very busy city, very crowded and very wealthy, and yet surrounding it are slums. And just another picture from the motel there. We then went along and did Sister Amelia's baptism. Well, it was interesting because we went there and this was the ride, which was one of the brethren's friend's utility, ute, which had seven of us inside the vehicle and the rest sitting on the outside. We had full enthusiasm in the chances of getting there when we arrived to find the driver putting ice blocks into the radiator to try and cool the engine down so it would actually drive. Interesting bit was we ran the service at beside the swimming pool. The swimming pool was being used. It was a public facility. No one came over to disturb us at all. So we actually ran, we weren't sure how much of a service we could do, but we actually did the discourse and sang hymns and all, and people just sat and listened there. Then we went in to do the baptism. It was interesting. The lifesaver cleared the pool. The only thing that worried me was when he saw it was Adam and I going into the water, he grabbed a bucket of chlorine and threw it into the swimming pool. Now, I don't know whether that was to kill us or to kill what was in the swimming pool, but it was a little bit of concern, to the point of where we covered her eye, or tried to cover her eyes and mouth. When she gave up, she knew it was chlorine. So there we were, baptising her and bringing her back out of the water. She really felt as if they were trying, she's an ex-JW, and she really felt they were trying to stop her because she badly twisted her ankle about an hour and a half before the baptism, and we nearly had to carry her in and out of the pool. We then went, and the Manila, these are the teenagers, the 20-year-olds that come along to the meetings, and they're very, very active in their meetings. And we went into town with them. We then went on to run with Brother Charlie, who's a new brother, who helps with the radio program that they do every week. This was in at the hall, into the Asian Mall. However, the fruit shop was interesting, and the bananas, for those who are crying at $13 and $15 a kilo, we were a bit stunned when he told us the price had gone up and it cost us 50 cents for 2 kilos. But the shopping was there. The fruit shop's all right. The meat market leaves a lot to be desired. There is no refrigeration. There are plenty of flies, and they've kill the animals in front of you just about. This was looking up the street from where the fruit shop was and from where the market was, and the pharmacy was there just on the right. You'll see the pharmacy. Well, it was interesting because one of the brethren needed some tablets. I'm not sure what she got. She asked for something and she got 6 tablets in a piece of newspaper rolled up. So we only assumed they were what she asked for and what they needed. But the shops are so crowded around the area. But they're very friendly people in the area. And the brethren were in getting some food for that afternoon. And again, just the streets that are there. But you'll love the doctor's clinic. That's where you go to. It's the lying-in clinic, and we needed it translated. We found out it was the birthing centre for Tagig. It was no wonder most of them tried to have them at home. But here we are at the Sunday school. It's interesting, the lady that leads it, it was a school principal. But because it's so corrupt in the area, the owner of the building decided that he could make more money if he ran the school instead of her. so he just put her out of the school and then found out, well, there was a slight problem. He wasn't qualified to teach, so the government wouldn't give him any money. So it was closed down. It's a very corrupt society. And there they were with their lessons up. I think, yeah, when dreams come true was what they were studying and looking at the different dreams there. And that's the outside of the Sunday school. As you can see, it's all built from whatever they can find. And that's the outside of the hall there. There was a window behind there, but they got a bit sick of stones being thrown through it at them, and so they had to cover it up. But that's the meeting hall. And that's beside the meeting hall. And, you know, that's just how close they live to each other. This is one of the sisters' homes. This is Sister Regina's. You actually climb down into it. One of the problems is that when it floods, it fills up to chest height for sewage. And then she cleans it out and goes back to live there. And that may happen once a week during the winter time. So it is really very difficult. And she's by herself. Her parents have totally disowned her. And makes it very difficult for her. And again, this is just a couple of photographs of the brethren in Manila. There's Brother Agrippino gets very carried away with his singing. The Filipinos love their singing, and they really do enjoy it. He puts on a radio show every week, and this is in the studio. I have never walked so far before in my life through a building, down through tennis courts, go all sorts of things, and we found a little studio, which the whole radio station took up the room of this part here. And he does a broadcast there every week. There's Brother Adam and I were doing question and answer with him, and we were looking at salvation and what it really meant. And again, we had the meeting on the meetings on Sundays. And you can see there's quite a large group there now. When you say there are 7,000 islands everywhere that you are flying, all you can see out the side are these little islands. And then you find that a lot of them are quite very rugged and not a lot in the area. Here we are, we've landed at Trago Airport. And the islands transport, and as you can see, there's first and second class. The second class travel on the roof as you're driving along. And if you ever buy rice from the Philippines, the brown is the rice drying on the side of the road, or on the road, in actual fact. As we're going along, the little villages on the side of the road, all the way through. And they have, here are the rice fields. They've got one crop off. It's rained again. They've got another crop on. There's no tractors. It's all done by hand and by work. Here we were. This was a tricycle ride to get along to the place. And here were the some of the brethren when we got to General Luna at Chargo. And the difference that they have made there is amazing. When we were there first, there was a husband and wife and two other brethren. They had nowhere to meet. We'll show you where we met in a few minutes. This is their hall that they've built. We provided the money for the materials, which was about $400. They did the rest, and it's all made out of local material. The pattern is actually out of woven bamboo. That's what they build it from. They have an eating area outside for them as well, and it's the Sunday school area. And this was the food they were setting out. And the kitchen is it's just a coal fire, and that's what they cook everything on. The showers are rather interesting. They don't have shower heads. You get a bucket and you throw it over yourself. The only trouble with Brother Agrippino is he showers at 3:30 in the morning and hits every wall in the shower with the bucket. As I said, transport's interesting. There's the buffalo. When they're not doing the crops, they're then carrying things. These guys were the, shall we say, the local removalists, and they were three children going around to pick up a load. That was the town hall, and the entrance to the town hall. It was interesting. It was all carved out, and there was the actually a map that they'd carved into timber. It's interesting though, at low tide the water goes right out and you have to be very careful when you're going to do a baptism, because otherwise you have to walk a kilometre out into the ocean to get enough depth to put them in. The jetties there with the low tide, the walkway, the tide does move in and out quite rapidly. This was the meeting hall, and what we've, the girl in red is very interesting there. That's Sister Beth. Sister Beth's been blind from 9 when they did an operation on her, both eyes at once. Over here you do one eye and see if it works. They did both eyes, it didn't work, so she's now blind. These were the different ones they're meeting. They've now got covers on the floor. They've scrounged the material because under that is just dirt. These were just the meeting. The lady with the pink is Sister Elma. She comes from Dipolo. She was an agricultural scientist, which means you'd think she'd get good money. If she was lucky, she earned between $40 and $50 a month with a full degree. And that was the kitchen that they cooked all of our meals in. We couldn't believe it, they did. And they cooked for 40. So the bathroom was interesting. It was outside and just you just went out and inside was a hole and there was a bucket and some water, and if you wanted a shower, that's where you had it. This was Sister Elma could translate my English, which I reckon was pretty good, as English isn't her first language, into both Tagalog, which is the main Filipino language, but the island we were on has its own language. The trouble is it's not written. It's never been written. It's purely a social language. And so that adds to the difficulties there. We had the people for the baptism getting prepared. The children also had their session there, and this was quite late at night that they had their sessions, and yet the children came, and as you can see, they're very wide-eyed and really do listen in and love their singing. And they were all sitting around meeting, and none of them seemed to create any problems. Sister Vicky is the sister that's in charge there because she has the language skills and the education. There are no men on the island that can fully read or write. She is training a brother up, which we hope will be able to take over. One of the young girls that wanted a photograph taken. Brother Adam was doing a talk on why we attend meetings and why we come along, and one of their difficulties is because a lot of them have no education, they're not used to study in any way, shape or form. So you actually have to train them in that. And yes, food, rice is nice, breakfast, lunch, dinner, supper, every meal is rice. Remember, we've got a new hall. This was the hall in 2008 when we were there. That's where we met and did the meetings and all. Here was the meeting on the beach at that time. So when you look at it, we And that was how they started to build the hall. That was what it looked like in 2009, a bit like a cage. Since then they've filled it all in. And here's the meeting hall of today. So they certainly are doing some work. Very few of us have a baptism area that looks like this. This was absolutely beautiful. And we got prepared for the baptism. We did find out you do not stand under coconut trees because more people die from getting skonked on the head by coconuts as tourists than dying any other way. And we saw why. One fell, didn't hit, but got close. Here we were. We'd gone into the water. Yes, we've got sunglasses on. It was bright, very bright in the water. And we did Sister Beth was, she's the blind sister. Being blind hasn't stopped her. She uses a computer that has a, does Braille as well. It is voice activated. You can send her emails and that, and it reads it to her. The worrying bit for us was that we were having a bit of a Bible study and we realised Beth didn't have her computer out. But Beth was quoting from the Old Testament. She'd memorised it. So she was an incredible lady. So we're doing the baptism for her and for the others that were there. We're doing the prayer at the end of the baptism. And then they had their photo opportunity. And there was Sister Beth. She was interesting. She had never in her life been in the ocean. She had no idea what it was. And we tried to describe it to her. And then we described to her, we'd walked out, Adam and I, trying to find somewhere where it was deep enough. We were 200 yards off the shore and we'd got it up to waist depth. We found one spot and just behind us was seagrass. And so we told her that there was grass in the sea. And she didn't believe us. So the only way we could do it was walk her out and walk her over it. And she really did. Here's some of the homes on the islands. As you can see, very, very basic. The power poles are interesting. They use trees as well as anything else, and the wiring isn't very good. It had rained that night, so the roads were flooded. So you just walk around them or walk through them. That was one of the streets in General Luna. These were the streets. This was into the police station was to the right, and shopping centre down through the street. All the coconuts that are there, they're drying the husks because that's what they use for cooking their bread with. And then we're back into the meeting hall for that evening's Bible study. So we'd actually started at 9 o'clock in the morning. This is 9 o'clock at night, and they're still going, and Adam and I are struggling. And they were there and really interested in doing their Bible study, and especially the young people. It was amazing how quick they were to find Bibles, and not all of them had Bibles, so they had to share them between each other. Then we took our ferry trip across the ocean, and you just don't look at the amount of rust on their ferries, otherwise you'd never get on. You do have a problem out in the Manai, low clearance is a problem. The man out there is actually sitting on a load of bottles that he's tied together. That was his fishing boat. As you go along, these are the fishing huts that you see as you're going out along the bay, and you just keep coming past all of the islands, and that was one of the views at sunrise. And one of the ones we went on is just a very large canoe, and here it is here. This was the fast canoe. The only trouble was on one of the trips halfway across, one side would fell off. So they said, well, that's all right, no problem, all sit on the other side and we can keep going. That was the bathroom, and that was the toilet inside it, so you made sure you did not go while you were there. Brother Agrippino uses two telephones at once to text. I don't know how. I have trouble doing one. There are also interesting signs they have over there, and one of them is pre-immortal call. Not sure why. A lot of their signs have religious things with it. Every one of their buses has one on it. This was with Brother Luciano. He is in Cebu. He is all by himself with his wife, but they still meet. He is hoping to join the other brethren soon. That's his wife, Sister Delia. We have over there, you catch up your sleep, and brother, as you travel. That was a small canoe to do the travelling. The only problem we had with it was the life-saving device, which has Vista on it, was actually tied with about 2 miles of fishing line to the top of the boat, so we didn't think we'd be rescued. On the island, they have every island has different boats, transport, and this was on this island, and peak hour is just chaos. No traffic lights. We then went down to Dipola, and this is Sister Alma's home. She actually meets with the students and with a lot of the children from the area. They were children wandering the streets in the afternoon because their parents were still at work. There's no aftercare, so she ended up setting up a Bible study for them. And there we were having rice, chicken again. The power cables are interesting. That was actually live and was sparking. But and this was the town. This was Dipola, which is the very southern island, and you have to be a bit careful. The last half of the island is Muslim, and it's quite dangerous if you are in the wrong area. And here they were. These were all the girls that came along. Now, this was school holidays, and they were still happy to come along and meet every day, and they do different lessons, and they sang for us.